Welcome. This is That Millwall Podcast. Today is a different show to normal. We are going to be talking about men's mental health. Fairly straightforward. We've got three great guests on the line. Obviously, I am joined even by my regular co-host, the one and only Omar.
Evening, Mickey.
Evening, fella. You've had a hard week at work this week, haven't you, fella?
I know, mate. I'm happy it's Friday, even though I'm in tomorrow, but, you know, we shoulder on. No games to talk about, but, you know, I'm looking forward to this show today.
No, that's it. That's it. Right. Why do we do this show? Well, we're all men. The statistics are scary. Lockdown's been scary for quite a few men. And we thought, you know what, let's speak to a couple of Millwall fans who do bits and pieces around mental health and around dealing with the mind. And while we're at it, the FSA has started a new campaign called Terrace Talk, which is obviously, I think, using your friendships at football to make sure people are okay. So we'll go around and quickly introduce people to it. So if you go first, Dave, if you can just tell us who you are and who you represent, that'd be great.
Cheers, Mickey. I'm giving up my Friday night in the pub to do this. Up here in Sunderland. I'm a Sunderland fan, but also deputy CEO of the Football Supporters Association. For those that don't know, the FSA is made up of supporter organisations all around the country. Supporters, trusts and affiliates, associates, fanzines, podcasts, the works. And we represent fans' views to the authorities in football, and we try to campaign and fight to get the voice of fans heard at the highest level. One of the campaigns that we've taken up recently, as Mickey says, is around Terrace Talk, and it's about sort of amplifying that message, particularly about blokes who do clam up about talking and talking about mental health issues.
Excellent. And we've got another fan who is Rob, who is the UK's number one unconscious mind therapist. So, yeah, if you can introduce yourself as well, that'd be great. Tell the viewers about you.
Hello, but I'm Rob. I'm actually the UK's number one unconscious mind therapist and the founder of Unconscious Mind Therapy, UMT. Also the owner of the Holistic Retreat in Marbella, Spain, and co-owner with Tam Hassan on Mind Soldiers, a charity that we're opening at the moment. It's a mental health campaign at the moment you will see on Instagram. So I also work on a daily basis with clients, helping them with mental health issues such as anxiety, depression, and so on.
You can check out, he's got a podcast if you have a check out on YouTube or just check in the description. Once this show is recorded, we'll put everyone's links and everything else in the show descriptions. Last but not least, by no far least, we have Scott, who is the founder of the Proper Men's Club, or Blokes Club even. Tell us about you and tell us about what you do then.
Yeah, so I started just a community-based project starting in Southwark, just dealing with trying to get men talking. It started off with just me doing videos whilst I was walking around and talking about issues that men sort of suffer with and what I've gone through. And then I decided to, just in between lockdowns, to start up groups. And if it was to help one person, that would have been great. But it's taken off really well in the local area. And we basically just do walk and talk groups a couple of times a week. But we also do one-to-one walks during the week. And it's just all focused around the main thing, and that's just getting men talking and trying to break that stigma of men's mental health.
So that's a good lead in there. I mean, there's some scary statistics out there, which I've dug up, relating mainly on a taboo subject, I suppose, to suicide. This time last year, there was 11,000, just under 12,000 calls to London Ambulance Service relating to suicide or attempted suicide between March and November 2019. Obviously, during lockdown, there was close to 16,000 calls to London Ambulance Service relating to suicide or attempted suicide. I suppose we're waiting for Rob to come back. I'll go to you first, Scott. Why do you think men's suicide rates are so high compared to women or compared to anyone else?
I think it's just something that men have been brought up with through generations, that have always meant to be the breadwinners or the man of the house, and not really open up and show feelings and always bottle them. And I think seeing their numbers, especially during lockdown as well, it's just madness that it doesn't get spoke about enough. I speak to a couple of lads on the walks about this as well. We talk about that was the ones that has happened and the attempts, but it was the amount of numbers that are actually thinking about it. And that's probably maybe three or four times more than that. So it's something that definitely needs to be spoke about more. But that's the real big question is why don't men talk? And I think through my own experience, I can't speak for anybody else. It's always been a case of we don't talk about things like that. It just gets put in the back of your mind. And you, as a man or a bloke, you're meant to just suck it up and crack on. And I think now that's the time. It's got to change.
Yeah, there's all the cliches in there. Man mm-hmm. up. Give your head a wobble, you know, pull yourself together, kick yourself up the arse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. While we're waiting for Rob to come back, we're going to you, Dave. I mean, why was Terry's talk formed as such, the idea to use? Was it because of, obviously, the way men's have this friendship around football for a way of people to possibly keep an eye like people do on their neighbours, et cetera? Was it that side of it before?
Definitely, it's. I mean, it's something that we've always been aware of in terms of we've done things in the past to get the mental health message out there, especially around blokes talking and this feeling that it's a weakness if you have mental health issues if you're a bloke, and obviously that's stupid. So it's always been around there, but the lockdown and the lack of football, but being able to go to a match has definitely brought it to a head. And it was sort of late last year, really, when we first started having conversations in earnest about what we could do. And definitely there's something in, you know, the rhythm of going to the match, like the routine, like something to look forward to as well. And a lot of people's whole social lives really would, for many, many thousands of people, centres around the match day experience, doesn't it? I mean, I don't know what it's like for you guys, but for a long time for me as a Sunderland fan, the worst thing about the match day is the match. It's actually the beforehand in the pub and the crack and a few beers afterwards and going home with a takeaway or whatever. That's what it's all about, meeting your friends, talking, having a bit of a laugh. And that's been whipped away from so many people. So I think that was probably the catalyst for it. And like all the best campaigns with the FSA, it's something that came from the ground up. It was groups of fans saying, this is what we're doing. This is what we've done at our club. We've been organising Zoom calls, like watching old games, that sort of stuff, and just getting people together, looking after each other, ringing around each other. And it was a push from quite a few different clubs and support organisations in the EFL who said, why don't the FSA take that up? And our network manager, Deborah Dilworth in the EFL, she took that to the rest of the staff team, and we drove forward and created Terrace Talk, which is just in its infancy. We've just got it going. We've had a panel discussion, which we can touch on later. But it's been really well received, and we're really pleased that we've entered into that space.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, Omar will be the first to tell you, mate, that the match day experience is sometimes a lot more important than go. I mean, he always speaks on here of his four cancer fosters on the train up to a northern shithole somewhere and et cetera, et cetera. Isn't that right, Omar?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's true, though. You have friends and you have football friends as well, you know, like, to excuse a pun from a TV show, football friends. But, you know, you have people that you see on a weekly basis that, you know, subliminally you might not consider a friend, but, you know, when that presence is gone, you know, it's definitely been a void that I know I've struggled to kind of, you know, deal with in the last year or so, and just kind of, you know, try and find other ways to, you know, keep myself going on a Saturday. Because, yeah, football is, and it is like something maybe myself that, you know, a lot of people maybe didn't give respect for, like with the whole lockdown situation and the priorities. Obviously, I understand, obviously, there's a lot more important things than football, but I do think, you know, having that opportunity to go to a game, you know, when it's gone, you miss it a lot, I have to say.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, Rob, you've got over the tech issues now. We were discussing, obviously, why is men's suicide so much higher than women? And you know, what do you think the reasons are around this? Obviously, in your professional capacity, what you do, you probably come across more than probably the rest of us here. I mean, what do you think the reason behind it is?
All right, and it's just a standard most men say. It's just that we don't speak, you know, especially if we're from like Bermondsey when I was a kid. I won't speak about it, but if I split up with your girlfriend and you fell down, mates go, shut up, you prick, shut up, you mug. And you'd get, you know, you just get laughed off. So men don't talk. You get, you know, I feel we don't like to feel silly, we feel stupid, you know, so, and we sort of carry this childish look with us as we grow older. And I think, I do think, through lockdown, men are speaking out. Like, look at us five now, running. I've been on so many chat rooms now. Loads of men, celebrities, they're all starting to speak out. So I think the lockdown's done us the world of good, to be honest, for men. But depression is not being able to see a future. People forget it's a thought process. It isn't, it's a mental health issue. Yeah, it is a mental health issue if you're living in that process of thinking. So depression is when you can't, you ain't got no future thoughts. So I mean, say, for instance, it takes away anything that you're looking forward to. So like you guys talk about football. On a Saturday afternoon, you can't wait. You're working a week. You're looking forward to the weekend, getting down a bit of pie mash, going to see your pals, going to the game, the pub. See, that's what makes us happy. Happy is when we've got future goals ahead of us. I might be going on holiday next week to Mirror, meeting your mates on a Thursday for beers. We've got little things that we're looking forward to. But when that gets taken away from us, we become depressed. So, example, if when my dad died, I couldn't see the future without him. So I got confused in that area of thinking. So what I was thinking about is the here and now, which I didn't really understand. And I kept going back to my dad being alive, my dad being dead, and go around in this loop. If you split up with a partner, what happens? You know, a lot of women get depressed when they split up with their partners, and men do. So they've got these visions of the future of getting married, you know, buying an house, having kids, whatever. He fucks off and cheats with some bird. And now all of her future vision that she's had laid out ahead of her just crashes down. So all she thinks about is the here and now in the past. I, you know, wonder what he's doing now. I bet he's with her. You know, last week when I was out with my pal, he must have been round her ass. Or then she thinks of a good memory, which is we used to be so happy this time last year. That's reminding you in the moment that you're not happy now. So when you go from here and out to the past, here and out to the past in that circle, we become depressed. Anxiety is taking a bad past experience and throwing it in the future. So a lot of therapists, I've heard this bollocks a lot, that, you know, depression is the past, anxiety is the future, we've got to live in the here and now. It's not fucking true, yeah? Because depression is the past, anxiety is taking a bad past experience and recreating it again in the future, like to reach, you know, to sort of like create to protect yourself from something bad happening again. So that's not a creative thought. See, when our future's been taken away from us, like in lockdown, we are going to get more depression. That means cortisol levels are going to go up, our stress hormone. No human organism can live in higher states of stress. So, you know, stress was designed for, like, you know, something bad happened, fight or flight, you'd have it on your toes. Like if you see a deer sees a lion, it will release adrenaline and cortisol and it will run and it will get, but once it's safe, it will stop. And it go back to grazing the grass again and its cortisol levels to drop. Well, as humans, we've learned to create, you know, be able to worry 24 hours a day. And throughout lockdown and COVID, you turn the news on, you're looking at stress, you talk about illness, your mates talking about illness, talking about the jab. It doesn't matter where you go, you know, we're looking at illness. People are getting to release so much cortisol at the moment that the illness through their thoughts alone will create more deaths than COVID in the end, I believe, because no human organism can live in higher states of stress. It becomes a poison after a while, and then it prevents our organ and our immune system from working and starts shutting down. So it's there's a lot. When you take away people's futures and people's, you know, little goals, and we're stuck, it's an hard time for everyone. And, you know, suicide, I would imagine, is going to go up pretty fast.
Mickey, you're on mute, mate.
I can't hear nothing, Nick.
Sorry, no, there we go. I think the problem is that our heads play games on us. I mean, something what we'll come on to in a sec with you, with a couple of shows where I looked at the way where you talk about the emotional and the mind, how if it's working together, it cures. But my personal thoughts to a degree, and I'm not going to go into too much detail, but the problem is your mind is a dreadful place. And unlike women who possibly, you know, if they find a lump on their breast, they talk to another best mate, or, you know, like when they, you know, something wrong with their period or something wrong like that, they feel free to sit there and do. The last thing I'm going to do if I've got something wrong with my cock is get it out in the pub and go, "Oi, Fred, have a look at this." Do you know what I mean? We just don't do that. And the same thing is in the head. And the problem is that your head is wonderful that telling you things what aren't there. And the problem is where you're not talking to other people to find out, if you did, if I was talking with, you know, us five are the best mates, if we had the relationship where I could phone up and say, "Scott, I keep thinking this, it's bollocks, isn't it?" And for you to say, "Yes, mate, I have those faults. They're fine. You just need to think about them a little bit and then put them away, and they're fine." But because we don't, we end up having a little tiny thought what suddenly becomes huge. And then when it becomes huge, it starts affecting you on an emotional level where you end up having anxiety, you end up having stress, you end up having everything else. So on that level, how much is the body... Do you find, Rob, that you have to combine the mind and the emotion, as in the body and the mind, to be able to move people forward?
It's the only way you can. There's no other way. There's not all this CBT, always keep thinking about the mind and let's talk about it. You know, if someone's fat, they understand that they fucking eat less and move more, they're going to lose weight. We're not stupid, but it's the emotional connections that we have. And, you know, it's the thought processes that we have. So for instance, on diets, if people, what does a diet do? If first of all, it makes you think about food, which is the problem, yeah? Why would you get an alcoholic? As a therapist, if I've got an alcoholic or a gambler, and then you brought me to my practice and you watched me do a session, I started teaching the gambler to think more about alcohol, or, you know, the gambler to think more about ulcers and joggers. I started teaching him about the weight of joggers. You think, what are you doing, Rob? You know what I mean? Like, you want an alcoholic to have less thoughts of alcohol. You want a gambler to have less thoughts of betting. And because the less he thinks about betting, the less he spends his money. The less he thinks about alcohol, the less he gambles. But when we're fat, we go, "I'll teach you about food." Just the first thought of a diet's mental. You know, it's the last thing you want to be thinking, you should be thinking about. So it's the old proverb of all time: what you think about, you become. We've got part of the brain called the reticular activating system. It's a group of neurons at the bottom of the brain that works as a filtering system. So basically, chaps, have you ever seen you see a car, you fancy buying a new motor, everywhere you go, you start seeing it. You got blue oil, you go around your mum's, all of a sudden you go and buy that motor. That's your RAS system. It doesn't know what you want and what you don't want. So it just knows what you focus on most of the time. When your missus has a baby, I don't know if you're any of your kids, the first baby you have, all of a sudden everyone's having fucking babies. You go around your mum's, your mum would go, "Yeah, boy, I bumped into Julie today. Her cousin's niece's sister's has had twins. Got to be sank in the water. Where I go, people having babies. The fucking always been having babies. Nothing's changing. But when was the last, if your kids are all grown up now, like me, when was the last time you see a pram? I can't remember the last time I see a fucking pram. But I know I drive past people with prams all the time, but my brain deletes them because we distort, delete, generalise information. So I'd recommend anyone listening at home, go on YouTube and just watch a few videos on the reticular activating system, the RAS system, and it shows you the science behind what happens. So when you're constantly talking about anxiety and depression, the more of it you're going to start seeing more evidence that you have it. The more you're fat and you say to yourself every day, "I want to lose weight, I want to lose weight, I want to lose weight," this filter will kick in and start showing you a visual evidence that you want to lose weight. People, for instance, go, "I can't stop eating." So the RAS system gets them a burger and they go, "I'm not even hungry. I don't know what I'm eating this for." They're actually saying it out loud while their visual proof is showing it. So it's about focusing your direction of thought. Stop talking about the fucking problems. Let's start thinking about, you know, the future. Let's like think about our goals. How often do we sit down and go, you know, "Oh, I'm suffering from anxiety." I know. So if you didn't have anxiety, what would you like to have? What would you be doing now? And start getting our thoughts moving into some sort of future, some future vision. Because when your thoughts go from here and now to the past, here and now to the past, here and now to the past, you're going to find motivation, desire, respect, high self-worth, high drive, love, all the good emotions that affect that thought process. When your thoughts go from here and now to the past, here and now to the past, That's the emotions that you get with that is depression, anxiety, loneliness, fear, low self-worth, low motivation, low desire. But yet we're taught to think, "Oh no, we've got to overcome our problems and then we can start moving forward." And we spend 80% of the time looking at fucking problems to overcome and our issues that we've had for a childhood. And we're fucking, you know, it's like walking forward, looking backwards. You walk into a wall. So you have to look where you're going. So it's, first of all, I believe if people started even just identifying that we can pivot, what do you want? Most of my clients go, what do you want from a day? And I go, I don't want to feel anxiety no more. And I don't have to worry when I get up on the bus in the morning. Like, hang on a minute. I never asked you what you don't want. I asked you what you want is. And they go, what do you mean? I don't even understand what the question is. I go, well, you're telling me what you don't want. I'm asking you what you want. I don't know what you mean. Well, tell me the fucking difference. You don't want to have anxiety, so you want to be happy. At least start getting your mind thinking on what you want and the direction that you want to go on. You don't want to lose weight. You want to be thin. Do you see what I'm saying? It's more about the direction of thought, and then the RAS system kicks in. It's all this want stuff. It doesn't understand that. It just understands the outcome. So I know I keep going on, but I'll get a bit excited over this sort of stuff. But Muhammad Ali, yeah? Muhammad Ali, what did he say? I'm the greatest. 18, he wins the Olympics in Rome. I'm the greatest. I'm the next heavyweight champion of the world. I'm the greatest boxer the world's ever seen. He's 18. Everyone thought, I hope he gets knocked out. He's fucking arrogant little prick, yeah? But when I studied Ali's mind, since the age of 12, he was visualising being a world champion. And then by doing this every day, you build these group of neurons, start showing you evidence that you can do it, that you're powerful. Then, you know, you look forward to doing the extra push-ups. You look forward to going through the pain barriers. And it's the difference between a semi-pro footballer and a pro footballer is the amount of vision of what they have, which allows them to have the commitment. They can all fucking curl a ball from a corner and do most of the things that the pros can do, but it's the commitment and mindset that makes the difference with visualising. Same as world champion boxers I work with, you know. It's the vision that creates the goodness.
Alan's had a good point there. After stuff we worry about will never happen.
Yeah, 94%. True.
Yeah. It's a good point because it is. I mean, you know, just before we come on to you, Scott, I mean, one where I can respond to a degree where I'm happy sitting there talking about is that, and Omar, I'll do it once Omar's drank the beer before he spits it out and possibly gets a full house on his bingo card, is when I was involved in Mill, especially with fan on the board side of it, there was a constant pressure that I needed to know everything that was going across social media. There was a constant feed what I needed. And the problem was that I could never, ever switch off. It got to a stage where I had to leave because emails, correspondence, Twitter, social media, phone calls, et cetera, was just, it was just a one-way journey. It was all coming to me. And because of, well, I need to deal with that, that you just become swamped with it. And you felt that if you didn't deal with it, no one else was going to. They won't understand that. I need to deal with that bit. And then you were constantly doing it. And the more you do, and especially when an event went off at Millwall, when something happened at Millwall, your head just, it was as if you just suddenly, I don't know, you just switch personalities. Your adrenaline flies through the roof and you just live on another level.
Can I come in on that, Mickey? It's you're touching on a point that I wanted to bring up, actually, which is one of the probably biggest existential threats to the Football Supporters Association, because we're built, our building bricks are supporter organisations, voluntary supporter organisations, where individuals at supporters of any club anywhere in the country will put their heads above the parapet to give up their time to be effectively the conduit between the supporters and the club. And it's a tough ask, what you're touching on there, because there's like an ambient level of stress anywhere, purely just by putting yourself forward to deal with all of that. So you've got, you know, a fan base with a million different ideas about how things should be run. You try to do your best to represent them, and you talk to the club about it. You'll have a club that might not listen, or a club that then goes does something mental, and then all of a sudden you've got this problem where there's a flashpoint that you're having to deal with, and you're a volunteer caught in the middle. And then added into that mix, you've got social media, so you've got a doesn't stop 24/7 feed asking you questions or with opinions that you're meant to then respond to. And that's something that we're going to be looking at from the FSA's point of view, is how we can help fans who run groups to mitigate that looming social media cloud that's always there, and try to sort of make sense of it so that you can, in the past I might have said you've got to be thick-skinned to do it, but there's proper ways to cope. There's mechanisms that you can employ to try to help cope with that sort of constant pressure?
It's not as easy. The problem is, and sorry to digress, Chris, onto this, but it is a subject I dealt with personally. But the problem is that you end up getting swamped with it. What happens is that you end up using it as a fuel. It's a thankless task. So you constantly try and I don't think it's consciously that I want to be liked. I don't think it was even that straightforward, but you do it because you think that actually there's a benefit out of it. And there isn't. I mean, no disrespect to all the fans who supported me when I was, you know, when I done the AMS battle with the other lads and I done the fan on the board. If, you know, the day I left, I won't give a fuck. Yeah, you got loads of people. Thank you very much for what you did, blah, blah, blah. But it moves on. But at the time you're doing it, you don't see it does. And yeah, you know, the official supporters group at Millwall, where I run a rival group, I couldn't stand them. And my hatred of them was starting to affect everything else. You were looking to reinforce those messages. You were thinking that, you know, you've got to deal with it because they wouldn't be able to deal with it, et cetera, et cetera. So I understand where you're coming from. And I think it falls into a bit all over that it's one of those subjects where, it's just hard to do. But Scott, how have you found it with getting your meeting up with strangers and doing the walks?
I just wanted to come back on a point that Rob was making, because he absolutely hit the nail on the head with it. When we do our walks and stuff, it's all about, once they come to us, they have a 2-minute like moan if they've had the ump with something, and then straight away we're trying to bring the conversation into a positive area. There's never been one situation where we've had a walk and at the beginning of it they feel a bit down. At the end of it, all of a sudden they might be planning a new job career or something like that. It always ends on the positive. And that's the easy now on the head, where you can't, if you've got an issue, you can't just keep looking back, as you said, just looking back at it. Oh, what am I going to do with this? You need to have these plans for the future. Although, yeah, lockdown has been rubbish for a lot of people, but it's also been a great opportunity to reinvent yourself, do something you never had the time to do before. Because that was the one thing we never had no time. A lot of people might have been on furlough or wherever it may have been, and this is a great opportunity to have said, look, now I can actually do those things that was worrying me in the past I didn't have time to do. And yeah, so Rob, you smashed it in the head, mate, with that comment.
Thank
mate.
You, mate, yeah.
I didn't say it was intelligent to you, though, I'm afraid.
No, there's no intelligence to it. It's no secret. You think of the future, you're going to start smiling. You keep thinking of the past. Well, I look at it, chaps, is like this. If you're overweight, yeah, and you think about how good you used to look, it looks like, you think of a good memory of being thin. What happens there? You think, oh, you know what, Rob, when I was 18 and a half, I was happy with my weight back then. You know, I had so much energy back then. I had all the birds ask me back then, what are you saying in the present moment? So you might be smiling consciously. Yeah, I might have looked good back then. What are you saying in the moment? I don't look good now. I ain't got no birds after me now. I'm a lazy bastard. You're saying the complete opposite. Even though the words are saying I look good back then, that unconsciously, translates to I don't look good now. So it's good that you're doing that. I like that. Couple of minutes, let them have to talk about it. You've got to get it off the chest, and then try to focus their attention on where they're going, not where they're coming from, sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
The way I look at it is like a sat nav. The RS system is like a satellite navigation system. If you don't put a postcode in it, where's it going to fucking take you to? Nowhere. It ain't going to move either. If you ain't got a postcode in, that means you're driving around the road you already fucking know. You know, that means you're doing the same things you did yesterday. You get out of bed the same way. You put the kettle on. You go for a walk. You go to work. Talk to the same people. Roughly watch the same TV programs. Drive home and you repeat the process again and again and again. Yeah, that's not having your sat nav on. When you want to make change, when you want to come from, even if you're okay to being great, from being depressed to being happy, you have to put a postcode in. That means it's a vision inside your mind of what you want. So if you don't put a postcode in a sat nav, it can't take you. If you ain't putting a vision of what you want in the future, how the fucking hell, where you going? Where you, how are you trying to get out of depression and anxiety when all you're doing is putting in your sat nav the thoughts that you had yesterday? You know, that's good, that Scott. I like that, mate. Yeah. Like, come on the walk with us, son. That'd be good.
No, definitely, mate. More than welcome.
So what did you do before you did the walk, though, Scott? Before you suddenly decided to go, I'm going to do this?
My own personal experience with it?
I mean, what gave you the drive to suddenly go, you know what, I'm going to give back and I'm going to do this and help others?
Well, so the short version of it is basically I had a lot of access issues with my little ones, and then that took me in and out of court every 2 minutes. Still even going on to this day, to be fair. And then eventually it did get to me over a number of years. And all of a sudden I've lost work, I've then financial problems, blah, blah, blah. Just as I said, that negative mindset was in full motion. I didn't have that vision in front of me, or no one around me to talk to really at the time. Or they were there, but I didn't want to open up. But eventually, lucky enough, I guess I'm one of the lucky ones that it got to a point of where I just said, look, I need to reach out and get some help now. So I reached out to the NHS, got some support with them. I'd done that CBT stuff, which didn't work, but it was nice to actually talk to somebody. And I think that was the catalyst of it, really. I was talking to someone that I didn't know, so they weren't going to judge me. And I was just sort of offloading, really. And then I just looked at some ways that I could make this feeling last for the rest of my life, really. And exercise was the one for me. And I weren't like a big gym head or nothing like that. So walking was the one for me. So that's when I started the first page, and I was just walking about and I was talking about the issues I've gone through and stuff like that. And it got quite a good bit of feedback, and it was helping some people. And in between the lockdowns, I just thought, look, if I can help one other person locally, then it's done its job. And one person turned up on the first walk. And we spent about like 6 hours out chatting, and it was like everything was released then for both of us, and we're both doing smashing from there. And from then, loads of other lads have joined the group, and it's followed that same model. You just meet another lad, give them a couple of minutes to release that pressure off their brain, what they've had a shit that work or the week, and then all of a sudden, by the end of the walk, they're buzzing. They're planning something in a couple of years, or a new job, or they're coming at it a lot better. So my passion behind it was just to help people, really, and just the one person. But lucky enough, it's helped quite a few people, and I'm really happy with that, mate, to be fair, and I'm trying to push it as much as I can.
Have you always done this sort of stuff, or did you retrain, Rob?
No, I started training about, God knows, 16, 20 years ago. So I started getting into it little bits at a time, started learning bits about it. But I got addicted to it because the first real unconscious mind therapy I learned, one of them was called neuro-linguistic programming. And I was off the Bonamy estate, the old Bonamy, you know, where just opposite the den now,
yeah.
The old Bonamy estate. And I used to live brought up on there, so I had didn't have fuck all growing up, poor, the usual story. But I had low self-worth, with dyslexic, with ADHD. So I was poorer than some of the poor kids. Like my neighbour had a next track, so I used to think it was like Dulce and fucking Gabbana, like up down East Lane. So like, I was like one of the poor kids. I had quite a lot of low self-worth, to be honest with you, compared to my pals and things. And I think once I started getting into the mind and started learning, when I started doing this stuff, I trained with a guy from America called Robert Dilts. I got addicted to him, ADHD. I just had to learn everything. And he basically let me see, if you had all the money, I won't go into it now, it's a long process, but you could basically rip down all your layers of what you think you want. So you think, oh, I want a car, I want to be rich, I want this. And I go, all right, if you've got that, then what would make you happy? Well, I'd have, I'd buy a fucking house in Florida, I'd have an house here, then what would make you happy? And it sort of strips you back to you've got everything you can think of outside your mind that you think is going to make you happy, like materialistically, because you come from nothing, you want something, as in my life anyway. And when he got me down, he stripped me down to a point and said, what makes you happy now? And it was an honest question I've ever asked. And I realised that I like making other people happy. Like, even when I was young, I'd come out of a club and give an homeless person my last 20 quid and walk home from Leicester Square to the Bonamy. Time I got to the elephant, I'd be calling myself a prick. What you fucking done that for? And I'd always be knackered. But, that's just the way I am. I'd always take the piss out of myself to see someone else smile. And that's when I sort of found my enlightenment, if you like, that I like helping others. And, once I found in tune with that, everything in my life just changed. I just went from strength to strength.
So obviously we're all football fans, so Dave, the success, or obviously I know it's in the early phases, but Terrace Talk, what's the aim of Terrace Talk, and I suppose the big question, has Millwall got on board with it yet, or if not, can fans do it on their own side of it without having to do it officially through the club?
Yeah, well, the Terrace Talk, very deliberately named because it is about getting blokes, or getting football fans generally, but we all, you've already touched on the issue of being specific to blokes as well. And it's about getting people to talk, about getting them to recognise the importance of doing that, not bottling things up, but also about inspiring activities, a little bit like what Scott's talked about there on going for walks. And it's about inspiring activities that directly could help as well. So, you know, replacing some of that, what we're missing around the social aspect of football that we talked about. But it's also like, it's an umbrella term, really. And like a lot of the things we do at the FSA, it's then up, it's about the different groups stepping up and getting involved. There's been various bits and bobs that's occurred already. I've got a separate window that I'll have to open to go through and list them. But it doesn't have to be linked to the club itself. It can just be the supporters groups. It could be multitudes of supporters groups in the region getting together. Some of the examples have been things like ring arounds, Zoom calls, actually raising money for mental health charities. We had guys at Hull doing that by revenue from replica shirts and things like that. So it could be anything anyone wants, as long as it's getting that message across and encapsulating that message that it's good for fans to talk and to look after each other. Because the supporter groups are there usually for, you know, specific things. It's about like match day experience or about how's the club being run. There's always like an agenda. Rarely have they ever sort of stopped and said, you know, we're also here just for each other. We're a support mechanism. We're here to put an arm around the shoulder and that sort of thing. And trying to break down those sort of barriers and make sure that people are just looking out for each other when you kind of get together.
Yeah, so I found it, Omar. Don't panic. I just, you know, I mean, I think the more football fans get on board, I mean, it might be, as I said before we went live, you know, Scott, I'll give you Dave's contact details, and it's probably good for you too to have a conversation after this to see what obviously you can do, maybe through Millwall or through this side of London, because I bet there's other clubs in London that might join you on a walk along the Thames, et cetera, and get on board with you, or they might want to just talk to you to go forward. I mean, how much, and you know, this is a question with all of you, I'll start with you, Rob, but how much is exercise a vital part of keeping yourself sane?
Yeah, I mean, it saves a lot of people's life, don't it, exercise? And it's proven for at least a high amount of dopamine. People like to, you know, makes you feel good. You know, once you go gym the rest of the day, you normally feel light and you sleep better. You know, that's what we're designed to do, move. So I believe, you know, and science proves that it's beneficial massively. You know, remember, these antidepressants, they don't release your dopamine, they don't release serotonin. They just hold your cortisol levels off. So that's all they really do. They ain't fucking much. And they go, some people go, I've got these tablets written in Louis serotonin. I've never seen no one happy on antidepressant. If anything, they end up, you know, the more they take, the more they end up motion less, they don't go up or down. So, you know, going for a run, there's going to be a better feeling taking a tablet. When my dad died, that's what I would do. I'd go for a run every day. Still weren't easy. Do you know what I mean? But you definitely know it's the days when you don't run. Do you know what I mean? I think it's a fantastic thing for people to do.
And Scott, to you, obviously, you since the last time we talked, you look a lot more slimmer. Obviously, I can only see your face compared to where you were. But I mean, what mileage are you doing a week now with your walking? And have you found that the exercise really helps?
Yeah, definitely. As I said, I think like the exercise was the key for myself, and that's what I wanted to try and do and push to other lads. And I think the word exercise to people means different things. And some people are a bit frightened by it. They think, like, if they've not done no exercise in their life and say exercise, they're like, I'm not going to go down the gym, I'm not going to do that. But like, all I'm doing is walking. And it definitely, I do quite a lot of miles. So it definitely at the end of it, I feel it. So it's definitely a good workout for me. But exercise probably won't work necessarily maybe for everybody. Do you know what I mean? Or there's different types of exercise you can do. It might be really limited inside your home. You don't even need to go out your ass a bit. But 100% you'll feel better than you did beforehand. But yeah, in terms of sort of like my sort of mileage during the week, I ain't too sure in a minute. It's not ridiculous. It happens because I'm doing all the one-to-one walks and other bits and bobs.
Didn't you a couple of weeks ago do 5 days of doing walking a marathon a day?
Yeah. It's something a bit silly to try and raise I'd done it purely on the basis that I needed to do something that was going to catch people's imaginations to push the cord a bit further, and it definitely done the job. and lucky enough, my feet didn't fall off by the end of it. But I think everyone's kind words and the amount of content it got, and there's a couple of papers got hold of it locally and stuff like that, which is really good. And then from that, although, yeah, I've walked them amount of miles for that week, I think we had another two lads that have come out from that that have reached out and got involved in doing the walks with me, and it's helped them. So and that's what I always do things by. If it helps one person, I'm happy. So it's definitely done this job so far.
So I've got one of the other questions I've got on here, and then we're going to stuff what you possibly want to talk about to a degree. What do each of you do to combat your own mental health, and what tips have you got for people who are listening or listen back to the podcast or find it on YouTube? I mean, what tips have you got, and what do you do personally? We'll start with you, Scott. Go on.
Oh, yeah. Mine was really simple. Just obviously the exercise part of it for me, and obviously that keeps me keeps me ticking over and keeps me really focused. But also having this group of lads with me as well. And it's weird because I've got a couple of really close friends that I do talk to. I'm really open anyway, but some people won't talk to their friends like that. But I've also got like a group of 40 local lads now that are formed from this group who are the same as my other friends. We talk about all the same stuff, but I can release whatever I want to them straight away. So I never need to bottle anything up. And there's always someone available to get out and have a walk and stuff like that, or a run or whatever it may be. So they're the two things for me, definitely. Definitely keep some sort of physical exercise, whether it's like really simple indoors, whether it's outside running. But then also you have to talk to someone as well alongside that, I feel. I don't think it will work on its own, because eventually it just keeps you, as like Rob said earlier, you might go for your run, you feel good, and then as soon as the doors close, you're looking over your shoulder, you're thinking, oh, that thing's still there, because you're not actually released it. But that's what works for me and for the lads in the group and stuff. But definitely some sort of exercise, and also having someone to talk to.
So what do you do, Dave? I mean, because obviously I can understand yours to a bit. There's a lot going on with what you do. You've got a lot of plates spinning as a whole. You've got lots of paymasters as such, different functions of the organisation to deal with, issues arising from, especially when football's there, of events or things will happen. I mean, what tips can you give people to be able to shut down?
Yeah, I mean, when lockdown last year, when it first begun, and everyone was sort of getting their heads around that, I think the first thing I did was delve into watching The Sopranos for the second time. That took up quite a bit of time. But to switch off, really, it's a sort of boring answer because it's already been mentioned, but it's the walking, getting out and walking. I, up north here, we have a fair few mountains over in the west, the Lake District. So I live like a couple of hours away from that. So, you know, once a month at least, I'd be over there walking up a mountain. But that, we obviously couldn't do any of that. But I'd be meeting my mates to do that. We'd have a few beers afterwards and stay over at Keswick or whatever. And all of that was taken away. So after, you know, you start getting a little bit of a rut at first. And then it's about just making sure you just get up and get out and get walking. And then you know, getting a little bit bored with that, walking the same routes around the streets of Sunderland. You then sort of think, well, I'm getting a bit bored of this. So I started listening to podcasts. And then all of a sudden I find I'm walking 5 miles, listening to two or three podcasts and interviews that I would never have listened to. And it's like a body and mind thing, isn't it? You're learning stuff. You're listening to inspiring people. And at the same time, you're getting exercise without even really realizing you're doing it. I think it's that and something that Rob touched on before, which I guess I've unconsciously done anywhere, is have goals, have something to aim for. Out of lockdown, it was always, when's the next weekend away, when I'm meeting my mates in the pub, when's the next match, you know, all that sort of stuff you could plan. So when you took that away, what are the next goals, you know? So some of it can be work-related if you enjoy your work, and some of it can be just simple stuff as I'm going to organise a Zoom call with my mates, watch the match while we're on Zoom, have that interaction and that social interaction that we've been lacking. So, yeah, a mixture, I suppose, but walking's been the key one for me.
So then, Rob, what do you do to sort out your own? Because obviously you listen to everyone else's problems and you've got to have a way of of being able to compartmentalize those problems.
People think that. They think that I need to listen to, you know, I'm not a psychotherapist. I don't work like them. They talk about the content of the problem. I don't want people's fucking anxiety. So I listen to their anxiety for a bit and I'll give them toolkits to move forward. And to, you know, a different thought process completely. I'll get them doing what they're not doing, spin them around, you know, completely. So for me, I don't really get that much bad mental health anymore because I program my thoughts. I program my mind because if I wake up every morning, I visualize every day my goals. Yeah, so I've got loads of goals I visualize first of all. This is because the unconscious mind doesn't know what's real and what isn't. So if you was to close your eyes and visualize a goal, so say if you wanted to grow your walking team, for instance, Scott and Dave, and you know you want to build that bigger, and you got to have a goal of how big you're going to take it. Otherwise, you're just going to get stuck where you are. Or what's the next level of it? And if you keep creating these visions when you're out walking, you know, or while you're out walking with your guys, you're talking about their goals, like what Scott said earlier. And it's like, and if you listened, they were all future goals that Scott said. They weren't no past goals. They weren't no forward. The ones that you see them to start, you started to smile. See, because the unconscious doesn't know what's real, what isn't real. It doesn't know what's going on in your three dimensional world. Or what's going on in a memory, or what's going on inside your mind now. So it doesn't know what's real and what isn't. So when you close your eyes and you visualize a goal, so if I get someone, like weight loss is easy, yeah, because it's an easy vision. So people go, I want to lose weight, I don't want to be fat, blah, blah. So when I get them to visualize a goal, for the first time, I always go, when was the last time you visualized yourself thin in the future? And sometimes most people go, no, I don't do that. And some people go, yeah, I do it all the time. And I go, oh, dear, what do you visualize? They go, well, about 4 years ago, I lost 3 stone. I go, hang on, I don't want to ask you. How often do you visualize a future goal? And they don't. They don't fucking do it because they won't be here. Because if you close your eyes and you visualize you in, you know, 6 months' time in the body you want or with the goal that you have in mind, and you visualize that you already have it happening now, your unconscious don't know what's true and what isn't. And the cortisol levels will drop. Between every human being's brain, this is science. As you visualize a goal as an outcome, a good goal, your cortisol levels drop by 30-40%. Your serotonin, dopamine, and dolphins all start to raise, and other beautiful things start to release to 30-40% of how you're going to feel in that goal. So you're starting to practice the emotional intelligence of having it, because you're practicing the mind and body connection, like you said earlier. So as you vision, if you go, oh, I want to be a professional footballer. Oh, fucking kid, everyone says that. But when you close your eyes and you see yourself as a professional player, if you listen to my podcast with Jamie O'Hara, it's a good pod, really good podcast on this topic, because he said he fucked his career up, yeah? His ex-Mirror player, then he got put, was it Portsmouth from London, just didn't he? And he said, when people used to ask him, Jamie, how'd you become a Premiership player? And he used to go, I don't know. He said, I used to go, it's easy. I used to just visualise myself playing for Tottenham and being a Premiership player, and I played football, that was it. He said, they look at me and think you're fucking, you know, think being fucking flashy. He went, but I didn't honestly know what else to say to him. But he said, when I got to Tottenham, when I got there, he said, and I was getting 40 grand a week, I stopped visualising. No one taught me what I was doing. I didn't know what I was doing. He said, so when I got there, I weren't training to make the first team. I was just training to sustain my fitness to play Saturday. He said, and I didn't have no visions of the future. So I started getting injured, going out on the pitch, you know, fucking things up. And I think the last straw was he said his girlfriend fell for a table in a club. He got pictured coming out, and what's his name? Redknapp said, you know, he's sort of out of it now, you know. But he said, now I've talked about the RAS system. He came to my retreat in Spain. We looked at the mind, and he was blown away by it. He went, this is fucking, and that's what I should have been doing. I should have been visualising scoring 30 goals for Tottenham this season. I should have been visualising making the England first team. He said, but I won. I got caught there. So this is another thing. You know, you can visualize your goals and get to a level, but then you have to raise your fucking standards and create new ones to keep moving on. Because this is what we are. We're creators. Yeah, human beings are creators. Everything gets made twice. First inside the mind as a thought, then outside even a reality. So anyone at home listening now, look around the room you're in. See if you can find, and you guys, see if you can find anything in the room you're in now that never started as a thought, that wasn't made twice. And there's one exception, except for what comes from nature and the earth in its original form. So except for trees, plants, cats, dogs, wind, rain, sand, snow, all that sort of stuff. If you look around the room you're in, you're going to see that everything first got created as a vision in a man's mind before it got created as a thing on objects. And I could go look at the inside and outside of every building in London, except for what comes from nature and the earth in its original form. See if you can find me one thing in the whole of London that never started as a thought. And there's nothing. So everywhere you go, you have to think about what fucking clothes you put on before you put them on, right? You have to think about pressing the buttons to come on here. Everything's getting made twice. And you have to start getting in that circle. Every look, you realise that things are getting made twice. So if you're not putting it inside there, don't expect a good future outside there, because this mindfulness stuff they're talking about is amazing. Yeah, it helps your anxiety, but don't fucking better your life. Don't cure it, because you've got to rely on your mindfulness every day of meditating and getting in the moment. And yeah, you'll take away your anxieties and feel better. Yeah, I'll get that. But you ain't going to get a better fucking life, more peaceful life, or more things that you desire, whatever that be. You know, you've got to first create inside there. Then that'll get delivered to you. Then you can enjoy the fucking moment. But it's no good living in the moment if you're homeless, for instance. What the fuck ain't going to help you? Or when you're down and depressed. We've got to start to see the future, the desired outcome. Sorry, if I'm going on a rant, chapter.
I'm gonna get you to do Sunderland's team talks, Rob.
Yeah, mate.
We've had someone there. Look, we've had Joe said, why don't we get Rob on board sorting the players' mentality out? And another one where we've had is, Chopper Harris beating cancer. The way he took that fight on gave Alan Smith a load of strength, for doing it. So I suppose there are, individuals, what will give you strength, individual goals and whatnot. So, look, we're coming up near the end of the show. We'll start with you, Dave. How can people get involved? I have got the link for you for what you're doing, but how can people get involved? How can people get in touch? And that really for Terrace Talk.
Well, as you ways, email us at info@thefsa.org.uk. With any ideas, or if you just want to have a chat about it, ping an email to us and we'll pick it up and get back to you on the phone or by email or whatever. But also, if you know who your local activists are at the club, or the supporters, have a chat with them. Think of an idea, whether it is walking along the Thames or whatever, go for it, do it, tell us about it. We'll showcase it on our website. That'll inspire other fans at other clubs to do it. And before you know it, around the country, everyone's just looking at what the best practice is and what the inspirational ideas are around it. And you'll have fans. It's already happened. We've already got 10, 12, 15 examples of fan groups or individuals just stand up and saying, I'm going to do this. So just tell us about it. Come to us if you want help with some ideas, and we'll show you what other groups are doing. And just don't be afraid to do it. Get out there, get in touch with your mates and go for it.
Scott, how can people get involved with the Proper Blokes Club? When do you meet on the River Thames, and can people join in?
Yeah, definitely. So we're over on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram at the Proper Blokes Club. So just ping me over a message on there. There is one thing I wanted to say actually on that, is that if you are watching this and you think, it doesn't affect me, I'm sweet, I'm all right. That's not the point of it. The point is, if you feel like this is a good little message, just give it a little share. Yeah, because the chances are that if you've got more than one friend on your Facebook list, then there's probably someone in there that might look at this and say, hold on, that might be something I need and might be able to get involved in, because they might not be able to talk to you or people around them, but talking to someone they don't know, so they don't feel that judgment side of things. So definitely, you can, if you need it yourselves and you're watching this, please feel free to reach out on one of them platforms. But then if you don't feel you need it, just at least give it a share, the page, and I'll give you my number on there, and we can do it that way. That's fine. And the walks themselves happen on Thursdays and Sundays, starting on the 1st of April, 6 o'clock on Thursdays and 6:30 on Sundays. And they both meet outside HMS Belfast near the Tower Bridge. And then we take a walk up the Docklands Pass, probably about a 5-6 mile walk. But yeah, that's how you get in contact.
Excellent. Rob, how can people take you up on some bits and pieces, or even get in contact? And what have you got going on? I know you done your you had your lessons this week, didn't you? You done an in-house camp or something.
Yeah. I'm training people to become therapists now, unconscious mind therapists, and to get my brand out there to help people properly and get results, I'm known for getting fast results in 2-3 hours, filmed on camera, getting people out of the house with anxiety, agoraphobia, and things like this. So a bit like Paul McKenna, Darren Brownie, sort of fast acting therapy. So yeah, I'm training today. I just finished it today. I'm teaching people unconscious mind therapy. I'm still doing my sessions. I still help people on a daily basis. I've got my retreat in Spain. People want to get away. They want to come out and have a week break. You get to, you know, exercise every day in a nice, beautiful villa, swimming pool. We got a nutritionist who does all the food, teaches you every meal you eat. She'll tell you why you're eating it. You know, like, I didn't know until I met her, 90% of serotonin comes from your gut. So what you eat can make you happy as well. So it's something to look into for people, diet. And yeah, and then the mind therapy. So we do that as well. I've got my podcast. I've got loads of information on. I've modelled the mindset of greatness on a podcast, sort of getting all successful people and showing you what I'm doing is ripping out what they all do the same, the unconscious process. Don't matter if one's like, you know, a club owner, one's a professional footballer. I had Wayne Bridge on there and Jamie O'Hara, and then you've got like people like Dapper Laughs, who's a comedian, and I'll show you what they'll do unconsciously the same, you know, to get where they got. And so yeah, there's some good help on there. You go on YouTube and Google me, or in the or on Google, and you'll find a lot of stuff. But Robert Iasi, name's there on Instagram, so yeah, that's a good one, and Facebook. So thanks, chaps.
No, thank you, by the way. Thank you to all of you, and maybe we'll look at doing this again in a couple of months, and just do, I think maybe I might come on one of your walks, Scott, bring my dog, terrify the River Thames. But look, I think we've been quite mellow today, to a degree. We've addressed quite a few points. I think the problem is with us as men is that sometimes we believe that our problems are our problems alone and no one else suffers the same as us, when actually if we do talk, as we found tonight between us five on the show, most of us have the same issues as such. We have the same thought process. It's just that because we don't necessarily talk, and it was something what Scott said earlier, you don't want someone to judge you with an issue what you might or might not have, so you don't necessarily want to tell your pal. But you're more than happy to tell a stranger, or you're more than happy to tell a therapist or someone else with a CBT, et cetera, et cetera. I was like, you, Scott, CBT, I didn't find at all entertaining. I didn't get on with that at all, same as you. But the talking to someone who doesn't judge you or anything else, I found really, really great. It was a good release, actually. You can walk out and go, actually, that thing I've just said doesn't make me seem crazy, that if I told Ted down the pub, he would have thought I was a fucking lunatic. And I think these little things, look, if this show, if you're listening back to this show, or you find it by accident or on YouTube going forward, or you're listening to it in a podcast when it comes out tonight and you're walking the dog or whatever, there's three lots of people's details what are going to be put on there. Our DMs are always open on That Mill Podcast. And my personal one as well. And if you just want to chat or you want to reach out, do so. We can put you in touch with the relevant people. There's plenty of people we know where if you do need proper help, there are people we can direct you to. But I think it's, I think the whole of this was just literally to try and help. If we've made one person think, actually, you know, I want to reach out. I'm going to go talk about what's going on in my head or what's going on. I think we've probably succeeded what we wanted to do, to be fair, gents.
Definitely.
I always like to end with a final word. So I'll start with you, Dave. Have you got a final thought or anything you want to put out?
Just that, well, first of all, just thanks. We're brilliant show, and what a great idea to put this out there. And let's just continue to have a conversation. Soon we'll be coming out of lockdown, hopefully. And let's not make this just a lockdown thing, blokes talking and mental health. Let's keep it going and keep the conversation out there. And let's say, get in touch with the FSA if you've got any ideas on how you want to amplify this message.
Scott?
Yeah, just the same, really. Thanks for obviously putting on the show, because it just shows that the movement's moving forward. And obviously the biggest thing is just if you need to talk, reach out. There are people out there, like us guys here, that are doing this stuff, but also the other services out there and other grassroots movements that are there to support you and help you. So don't suffer in silence and don't worry about manning up or anything like that. Just reach out and get the support you need, because it's out there.
Rob.
Same again, mate. Thank you very much, chaps, for having me on. And you know what you guys are doing with the walking and helping people is absolutely amazing. So I'll just say visualising it and materialise. You know, if you can't see it, you can't be it. So bear that in mind.
Excellent. Omar?
Nothing to add. Just, you know, great to listen to this today, to be honest. Obviously, you know, it's great insight. And obviously, you know, as the guys have said there, just to echo it, you know, it's good that we've all spoke about it today.
Yeah, it's amazing. Men speaking out. I think it's great what you've done here, guys, by the way, organising this. The more we see men speak out, the more that men are speaking out, you know. It's good. My business partner, Tamer Hassan, in the Mind Soldiers, my charity I've got that we're opening, and it's starting to go. It's good, you know, more men we get speaking out, the more the younger generation. After we find, you know, through lockdown, a lot more of my clients have been men. I didn't hardly used to get any, you know, it's minute. But I've started noticing men are, you know, they're starting to open up, and men are bringing their pals here and paying for their pals and things like that to come and see me. So it's definitely getting there.
It's a lot more programs now, isn't it, where it's focusing subconsciously, maybe, where there's a lot more programs what are focusing more on you know, it's okay not to be okay. And you know, it's good to talk, it's good to this, and I think a lot of these programs, when you see guys opening up a bit, especially big guys, you know, like movie stars or whatever, talking about their inner feelings, then it sort of gives, you know, us lower level people, actually, you know what, if he's doing it, then we can do it, and vice versa. So look, this was a special. We'll hopefully probably do one of these again in a couple of months' time. We just wanted to do something as Millwall fans to say, look, you know, we've got a reputation, we've got this image of being Millwall fans, but actually, you know what, it is good to talk. If you've got a pal who you think actually hasn't really picked up the phone as much as he used to, just give him a call, check that he's okay. Remember, don't ask once, ask twice. Remember, it is okay not to be okay. Thanks very much for tuning in. This will be released as a podcast. This will be on the YouTube channel to watch back. And again, thank you very much for joining, and enjoy life.